There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid. Steve Faub is on assignment. This is podcast number 577. May 24th, 2012. Stephen?
No, this is Nasser Hamid. Thank you. Hello, listeners. Hope all is well. Good to be back on the air.
Any sponsorship? Google ads or Yahoo ads or Lipton tea?
How about Williams-Renault, the machismo combination?
That's a good combination. Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Monaco. For me, it is the best. Kimi wants to go and do some rallying in Finland. Is this Schumacher's last season? Again? And Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi himself, Nasser Hamid. And special interview this week with Luis Sasilva. And this weekend's special interview, podcast number 578, will be with Jake Dennis. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Thank you, sir. I'm doing very good. Waiting, just like you and most people out there, for Monaco. It should be fun.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic. And of course, Monaco, the crown jewel in the championship, and with five different winners.
I am looking for number six.
We are looking for number six. We've got Nando, believe it or not, winning the Drivers' Championship, but tied with Sebastian Vettel. But very, very tight. Very, very exciting. A lot of people blaming Pirelli. How do you see this weekend developing?
Well, in terms of people complaining about Pirelli, one of them is a gentleman who has won a lot of races and a lot of championships. But I do not recall the same person complaining when he had a team that had a team that could just go out and test on Bridgestone, and Bridgestone was all wrapped around his team. But you know, the man has so much success, you cannot argue with him, and he does have some backers. But I think this thing may be a little bit Mickey Mouse. The tire has become such an issue, and so is the DRS. But the thing is, you know, if everybody has the same equipment, same tools, same tires, same track, then you know, you have to adjust.
Yeah, we all have to obey by the same FIA rules, and certainly the fans have been given a fantastic, exciting season so far.
So far, absolutely. And it looks like the trend will continue. And the other part of your question is about the winner or what will happen. I don't know. But I was thinking today, I said, who could be the sixth new winner? Then I said, well, Hamilton has been very strong in qualifying. And if he gets on pole, it's not easy to pass in Monte Carlo, as many have found out. But then I started thinking, you know, I said, hey, wasn't this the place where the first rumbling of the cage rattling took place? If you remember 2007, he was running behind Nando and he wanted to pass him, and the team told him to, you know, hey, cool down or something like that. And he did not like that, which we found out later why. But he could be one. I am really, really hoping. And you know, over the years, I've been a big fan of anybody who I think is a very good driver based on performance. Kimi has won a lot of races. It will be great to see him win. But I would love to see Romain Grosjean pull out a win in Monaco. So that should be good. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. And of course, Pastor Maldonado, great experience. A lot of success here at Monaco and some of the lower formulas. So we expect the Williams to actually do quite well.
Well, apparently they have a very good grip in slow corners. And talking of Maldonado, he was at one time banned from racing in the streets of Monte Carlo, And this is when in the 2005 World Series by Renault race, there was a yellow flag, and he struck a marshal and almost killed him. So they were not happy with him. But apparently his papito offered to pay for the medical bills of the injured marshal, which proves again, whether in love or near death, money talks. And there is a lot of money in Monaco, in the harbor, in the tunnel. But like you said, he has a strong record at Monaco, winning in both World Series by Renault and GP2. And last year, I think Hamilton mistook him for Massa and took him out.
That was exciting last year. Yeah. There was a lot of little things happening. Lewis Hamilton wasn't having a great day last year.
Yeah.
But things, Martin Whitmarsh, has come out and saying that Hamilton is having so far some bad luck. And he certainly does deserve the win here in Monaco as the sixth winning driver because of all this bad luck. Some of this bad luck was pretty much made up by McLaren and their mistakes. So I think if McLaren can have a mistake-free weekend without clowning around in the pits and bad decisions, you're right.
And, it's always good to have these screw-ups, bad mistakes, bad luck, or whatever, driver error in the early part of the season. If they are made in the last two, three races, if you go in the gravel in the second last race, or if you have gearbox gremlins on the opening lap or the second lap of the final race of the season, or if you get called into your box a little too early, they can cost you a world championship.
Absolutely. Now, Pirelli, because of all the criticism has come out, Paul Embry has said that if the teams want to, we will come out with tires specifically for Q3. So that way we see everybody come out and then they could start the race on fresh tires, unlike the rules right now where you start the race on the tires you qualified on.
Which is not a bad idea. But the thing is, at the end of the day, everybody's playing by the same rules and same tools, like I said. And no matter what they do, qualifying tires, one-lap tires, or one-lap qualifying run, one car at a time, no matter what you do, there will be some people complaining. You can never have everybody happy.
That's pretty much the same here at F1 Weekly.
Yes.
Having everybody happy is pretty hard to do.
Yeah, but sometimes those zero checks bounce, so you cannot complain about the employees.
Well, that's just, the economic situation here. Yes. It's tough. Moving on, a lot of people talking about Paul DiResta. Mercedes, it's been all over the internet, is watching Paul DiResta, maybe possibly moving to Mercedes to replace Michael Schumacher, because Michael Schumacher's been whining, he's been running into people. And Ross Brawn has come out and said, "Much has been said and written about the accident in Spain, but we should not forget that we, the team, have let Schumacher down in three of the five races by not delivering the best job possible. We must do better. I saw Michael's driving quality in the first race, therefore I believe that he will still be on the podium sometime this year."
It's very possible given the car, the tools. But the thing is, when all is considered, if you put aside all the great achievements he had in his first go around, what has happened in the last 3 years is just the desire is there, the commitment is there, which is much, greatly appreciated, and the commitment is there, which is all great. But, that's what you expect from Michael Schumacher anyway. But in terms of performance, he's not performing below Ralf Schumacher. And if you have a driver for whom finishing on the podium in third place was a very bad day, now he's nowhere even near. Do you remember, if you recall, when he first was announced and Nico Rosberg was basically off the radar for a few months? Media did not even know if he existed. And first year, second year, third year, who has the first win? Nico Rosberg. So I think, he should go out gracefully and crashing with different drivers and getting all pissed off, calling Bruno Senna idiot. Maybe these are all signals that, it's time to, enjoy his retirement.
Well, some people said Michael, by the way, was at Le Mans. And
at the MotoGP, yes.
Correct. The MotoGP race at Le Mans. And when Stoner announced his retirement, a lot of people thought that maybe Michael might reflect a little bit.
I saw him hanging out with Valentino Rossi, another champion who's struggling. So maybe misery loves company.
That's true. Keep up the good work, Nasser. Let's move on. Felipe Massa, he says the team is behind him. And, of course, the team said this weekend he has to kick it up a notch. Do you think? I think Felipe Massa is going to be with Ferrari till the end of the season, no matter what happens. There's a certain amount of loyalty, and Ferrari is just the way it is.
You know, every driver who's pushed out of a team, which included Alain Prost, the team is always behind them, behind their removal. But, you know, his contract is through Nicolas Tard, who is the son of you-know-who. So there's a very strong political connection there, which might see Massa finish out the season. But he's now performing worse than Kimi Raikkonen when he was, when the team got behind him and showed him, you know, the way out, the exit door. And I feel sorry for him. I mean, here's a kid who, you know, did very well. He was very, very graceful in his defeat in the World Championship, which a lot of people, even gentlemen like Tony Brooks, mentioned that how graceful and how nicely he carried himself. It's pretty much over. And I think, you know, there are rumors that the August break might be used by Ferrari to announce a replacement. I personally think it will be their main horse is Nando. Okay, so they're fit there. And I think what they should do is buy out his contract and put in some guy who has some experience. Di Resta, you know, probably with a Mercedes contract may not go. But Sergio Perez is certainly some guy who they can bring in. He's done well. He has a couple of years of experience. 6-7 months in a Ferrari would give him time to blend in and learn how to behave as number two, numero dos to Nando. So I think that's the way they should go.
I think that's a good idea. I think you're right. Yeah, there's no way Paul De Rossa is going to go to Ferrari. I think he's pretty much locked in with a Mercedes contract. Anyway, let's quickly go to Kimi Raikkonen. He announced that he wants to participate in the WRC Rally of Finlandia. Now, with the Kubica thing behind Eric Boullier, and he's gotten over it, and he got Kimi Raikkonen, does he have a chance in hell to go rallying while under contract for Lotus F1?
Well, you know, if this news, I just saw the headline also, if there is no such thing in his contract as what he can do, what he cannot do, then, you know, Kimi being Kimi is going to do what he wants to do. Kubica lesson was a lesson for everyone. Here's the kid, and I feel sorry for Polish motorsports fan, because you know how hard it is to get into Formula One. You get into Formula One with a good team, and you are, I mean, everybody was talking about him going to Ferrari someday. If you are that level of talent, it's very, very sad to see that talent go wasted because of a mistake or problem in a sporting event like rallying, which was not really required. I mean, this is like going bungee jumping or going in the Sumatran jungle looking for tigers and something goes wrong. So I feel very bad on that front, but I think, you know, the way Kimi has gone, he's on full song. He is the Kimi of 2006 McLaren, 2005 McLaren. I think they should, you know, tell this guy, hey, dude, we brought you out from NASCAR truck racing. Just do Formula One.
I agree. We'll see what happens there. We'll follow that closely. Before we go to break, I want to mention that Nigel Mansell, one of your buddies and favorites, will be the guest steward for the FIA here in Monaco.
Yeah, and which is interesting. And, you know, talking of Mansell and Monaco, obviously, you know, when you are at that level, you have people who like you and people who, for whatever reason, don't like you. The Mansell detractors, they always point out to his excuse that he spun in the race when it was raining and he could have won because he drove over the white line. And when Mr. Brazier and I were at Classic Lotus and we were interviewing Bob Dance, even he brought up the issue, and it was pretty, you know, when you talk to people at Lotus or anybody who has worked with Mansell, it's like a serious love-hate relationship. But one guy who does have a great opinion of him, and the guy is a tremendous racer, but one guy who likes him very much is our good friend Peter Windsor.
The professional.
Oh, yeah, the very professional. You know, he has his own webcast, podcast, the Flying Lab.
Yeah, podcast, Flycast. It's flying. Fly fishing, isn't it?
Yeah, in North Carolina. with Ken Anderson. No, I have his phone number. I have his email address. I would like to contact him and do because I know quite a bit about his tremendous history. You know,
absolutely,
coming from Australia,
absolutely,
with nothing, and it was a great. You know, that guy Peter Collins, who is also originally from Australia, helped him get into racing and all that. And he was a press officer. I mean, he has a lot of stories. And I have a tremendous respect for his motorsports love and passion and knowledge.
So, no, that would be a fantastic interview.
Yeah.
Keep up the good work, Nasser. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Don't forget, we've got the beautiful interview between Nasser and Luis Sasilva. So stay tuned. And we'll be back after this brief message from Bacino.com.
Bonjour. Want to stay in a charming accommodation near the historic and famous Cognac and Bordeaux regions of southwestern France? Imagine yourself surrounded by the rolling hills and vineyards of the Charente region, sipping on cognac or the local aperitif Pinot de Charente. Opening in June 2012, Bacino offers traditional French country lodging in rustic stone cottages, fully equipped with modern comforts, suitable for families, travelers, or groups. Share a home-cooked meal with your host and soak in the ambiance and joie de vivre of the tranquil and rural French countryside. Bacinode is only a 90-minute drive from the Bordeaux airport or 30 minutes from the nearest train station in Angoulême. Navigate to bacinode.com for information or to book a reservation now. That's BASSINAUD.com. Allons-y!
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the Swami, the King himself, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and musical regards from Men at Work. Which is what we are also. We're always working.
I can't stand it anymore.
Really?
Yeah, wow. I need a vacation.
You need a vacation? Where will you go if you have a vacation? Monaco?
Monaco.
Well, they're waiting for you in Texas, let me tell you that.
I saw miles of Texas.
Yep. Okay, today we have first Aussie mate on pole at the Brickyard. Adios amigo from another Aussie mate in MotoGP. German tin tops. And F3 Euro Series from Brands Hatch. Australian tin tops from Phillip Island, and of course, mother of all tin tops and pride of Alcoa, NASCAR from Charlotte, North Carolina. We shall start with pole day for Indy 500. Ryan Briscoe will start from pole position, and I met Ryan Briscoe in 2004 at Imola when he was a test driver for a Toyota F1 team. So this is his first and first ever for an Australian driver. But pole number 17 for Mr. Penske at the Brickyard. Sharing the front row will be James Hinchcliffe of Canada with his Andretti Autosports teammates from Florida. Ryan Hunter-Reay is the third and final man on the front row. Ryan Hunter-Reay has a very good chance of winning this race with Andretti Autosports. But I have a feeling it will be Team Penske. You know, if Castro Neves wins, it will be win number 4.
It won't happen.
That's a very good chance. He's very good.
I know, but
good.
The numbers will start stacking up against you, and he'll spin and crash. We've got Rubinho now.
Good.
And just quickly, I want to mention that we do have a report from one of our listeners, from Christopher DeHardy, Auto Racer 5.
Yeah.
He'll give us a little indie report that we will play in the program.
The season so far.
Exactly.
Hello, listeners of F1Weekly.com's podcast. This is Christopher DeHardy, your IndyCar consultant. Doing a slight review of the first quarter of the IndyCar season and a bit of a preview for the month of May at Indianapolis. Team Penske has completely dominated the first four rounds of the season, with Elio Castroneves winning in St. Petersburg. Will Power has taken the last three events on the trot with Barber Motorsports Park, Long Beach, and also Sao Paulo, Brazil, where he's won the last 3 years. Heading into the month of May, we've had a few on- and off-track situations going on. The most prominent one being off-track is that Lotus has been sued by Dragon Racing, citing breach of contract, and they're seeking over $4 million in damages. Brian Herta Autosport left Lotus and is with Honda Power for the rest of 2012, while Dragon Rheinbund Racing left Lotus, and they're actually doing a technical alliance with Panther Racing for the rest of the season. Apparently they're moving into one shop or something similar to that. Now, rookie orientation has been going on today and yesterday as well, this being May 11th that this is being recorded. Rookie orientation from this year has seen James Jakes being the fastest at 218.268 miles an hour. He's doing a bit of a, well, secondary rookie test because he didn't make the race last year, and so he's still technically a rookie this year. Brian Clausen and Joseph Newgarden for Sarah Fisher Hartman Racing are next on the list with laps of 217 and 216.5. And then Rubens Barrichello, the two-legged variety, going in fourth fastest at a little over 214. Simone Pagenaud is fifth, just slightly underneath Rubens in speed, but still over 214. Michelle Jourdain had to take a rookie refresher since he hasn't driven at the track since 1996, and he clocked a lap at 213.6. Wade Cunningham has gone through two of the three phases, if what I'm reading here is correct, and he did a lap at 210.318 miles an hour. This afternoon, John Alesi went out into the track and got through his first two of three phases in the rookie orientation. His quickest lap is a 208.796 miles an hour. Apparently, Tim Wardrop is engineering the car, and well, he's actually a very clever engineer, if I may say so myself. Now, the month of May, we also have Dario Franchitti actually switching numbers from 10 to 50, indicating Target being in operation for 50 years. We also saw a couple of other one-off deals being negotiated with Townsend Bell driving the number 99 car for, I think it was Sam Schmidt Motorsports. Wade Cunningham, as I mentioned, driving the number 41 car. We also have the Brian Clausen entry in the number 39 Sarah Fisher Hartman Racing car as well. Well, let's see what the month of May brings us. We have pole day on the 19th, bump day on the 20th, and then race day on the 27th. The Indy Lights race will be on the 25th. It's the Firestone Freedom 100. And then we get the, it's also on carb day as well. Well, have a good day, everyone. And also, rest in peace, Carol Shelby.
On a sad note, Jim Nabors will not be singing Back Home Again in Indiana. You know, there is a line from this song which is very heavy. The new mown hay sends all its fragrance through the fields I used to roam. You know, some years ago I was flying out of Indy and I picked up the, official program, and I was, plane was taking off or whatever, and I was flipping through the pages and there were the lyrics of this song. And when I heard when I read this line, it was freeze on chills at 30,000 feet. Very, very powerful.
It's beautiful and touching.
It is. The race is this weekend, of course, so a great day for motorsports fans around the world. Monaco Grand Prix and Indy 500 plus the Coca-Cola 600. That's almost 1,400 miles of racing.
How do you think Jean Alesi is going to do?
Well, I'm hearing reports that they may not be allowed to race because they are so slow. I don't know, but that Lotus engine is a joke.
It's a pretty sad state of affairs.
It is.
But we'll move on.
Yes, we will. MotoGP from Le Mans. First pole of the season for Danny Pedrosa on a Honda, ahead of teammate and defending world champion Casey Stoner. Race winner was Jorge Lorenzo from Mallorca on a Yamaha. Victory in the rain also gives the Spanish rider lead in the championship. You know, I remember when he came into MotoGP as teammate to Rossi, of all the people. Man, what a bang he made. I think in the first two races he was in pole position. And that's quite an achievement with Valentino Rossi as your teammate. A great battle on the final lap between the Doctor and Stoner. Valentino taking second. His best finish on a Ducati. Stoner was third and earlier in the week announced his retirement from MotoGP at the end of the season. So a great career coming to an end while still at the top. And Casey is on the BB King program saying the thrill is gone. And all we can do is wish him well for this season. It'll be great if he can win the championship again, which will be his third one on Ducati and two on Honda. And then say, you know, see ya, mate. But let's see how it goes. Pole sitter Danny Pedrosa was fourth for Honda, and Nicky Hayden was the highest placed Amerikanski in sixth place for Ducati. DTM German Tintop from Brands Hatch and beautiful Kent. Gary Paffert winning from pole in his Mercedes. Bruno Spengler from Canada was second in his BMW, and Mike Rockefeller of Germania was third in his Das Audi. Joey Han from Sacramento, California, and the only American in DTM, was 13th in his BMW. You know, many, many years ago when Monty was racing in Europe before he got to Formula One. He took part in one DTM race also because he was, I think, driving for a Mercedes engine F3 team, so they asked him to come in, but did not go very well with him. But the kid is very, very talented, no question about it. Talking of F3, we come to F3 Euro Series, also in action at Brands Hatch. After, you know what, this could be some really great news that all of Italy has been waiting for decades now. After dominating Pau Grand Prix, the 17-year-old Italian Raphael Marcello won the opening race of the weekend from pole sitter Daniel Juncadea of Spain. Michael Lewis from Southern California was third. In race two, Jasmin Jaffer became the first Malaysian driver to win an F3 Euro Series race, and this was the reverse grid race. Sven Muller was second and Pascal Wehrlein was third. Third and final race of the weekend saw Marcello winning again over Will Buller and Michael Lewis. And Mr. Senior Marcello is young. He's also in the Ferrari driver development program. He's getting I go to a couple of Italian websites. He's getting a lot of press and coverage. And, you know, when you're winning, that's very good. And the way Marcello is winning again and again, Luca might replace Massa with him. You never know.
That would be stunning. But the way he dominated at Pau really just put him right to the top.
Yeah, and he raced in the early in the year in the Toyota Racing Series in New Zealand, and he was making his name there also. So it will be interesting, you know. I would love to see an Italian world champion. They have not had a world champion since Ascari in 53. Can you believe that? World Touring Cars from Salzburgring in Austria. Chevy 123 in the opening race of the weekend. Rob Huff was the winner, Ivan Muller second, and Alain Menu third. Second race of the weekend was won by the BMW of Stefano d'Aste, his maiden win in the series. Apparently, a lot of drivers had a problem with some tire issues on the final lap. Huff was second for Chevy, and Tom Coronel was third in his BMW. And I believe Tom Coronel also did some IndyCar races here in the US. He's from Netherlands. Australian Tin Tops, known as V8 from Phillip Island, one of the nicest tracks anywhere. Race 1 saw an all-Ford podium. Frosty, a.k.a. Mark Winterbottom, was the winner. Shane Van Gisbergen was second and Tim Slade third. More Ford success in Race 2 as Will Davison takes the win and with it lead in the championship. Craig Lowndes was second in his Holden and Jason Bright third in another Holden. And Christian Klien, you remember him?
Of course.
A one-time blue-eyed boy of Red Bull, a claim many racing drivers can make, will race in a couple of V8 endurance races this year, including the 50th edition of Bathurst 1000 in October with Walkinshaw Racing. Now we come to, the Nürburgring 24 Hours. Audi 1-2. The winning car was driven by Bassing, Winkelhock, Hasse, and Stippler. And third was a Mercedes SLS. Can you believe them? 24 hours on a 14.2-mile fantastic track.
Unbelievable. Exciting.
Yeah. I was chatting with Marco Wittmann, who used to race in Formula BMW F3 Euro Series, and he's now under contract to BMW. He was doing well. He was running in the, you know, looking for a top five finish, but then he has some mechanical issues. Newey in the news, as in Adrian Newey. He will race at Silverstone the first weekend of June in the Lamborghini Blancpain Super Trofeo Series, sharing a car with Alberto Sabatini, who is editor-in-chief of Italian magazine Autosprint. Finally, Saturday night fever hit Charlotte Motor Speedway. Jimmy Johnson took his third win in the All-Star race driving a Chevrolet. Penske driver Brad Keselowski was second in a Dodge, and Matt Kenseth, the best of Wisconsin since the late Alan Kulwicki, was third in his Ford. And now I am sure you are waiting for the live coverage soon of the Larry McReynolds All-Star Barbecue. Hours and hours of fun of grilling, pork chops and steak and chicken wings.
And cowshins?
And cowshin, yeah. If the chicken is not marinated properly, somebody will throw a yellow flag.
I like that.
Yeah, so that'll be good. Are we ready for a goodie bag?
We are ready for a goodie bag, and this weekend there's so many goodies.
Yes. This goodie bag is called Moments from Monte Carlo.
Early on the power, I'm sure. Now, through the bend in the tunnel.
It's got to be a brilliantly courageous move by Nigel Mansell if he's going to win the Monaco Grand Prix for the first time, because Senna knows that he's got considerably less than half a lap between himself and his first victory of 1992. This is the swimming pool. It's only the left here, the right again, the left, and into the Raskas. And I do not see how Mansell, even Nigel Mansell on fresh tyres, is going to be able to get by. He can't. Ayrton Senna has won the Monaco Grand Prix, almost certainly, as he exits the Raskas. Mansell closes, but it's too late. Ayrton Senna wins at Monaco for the fifth time in 6 years. An incredible achievement.
The Monaco Grand Prix is one of the originals from the first year of Formula One World Championship in 1950. But the race has a much longer history, dating back to the first race in 1929, when the winner was William Grover Williams in a Bugatti. The second running of the event in 1930 was also won by a Bugatti, this time driven by René Dreyfus, who later in life ran a restaurant in New York City, which I'm sure you know that, right? Bugatti won three in a row when local driver Louis Chiron won the race. He would be associated with this race for the rest of his life. I think he was like the flag marshal and the course of the clerk and everything. Clerk of the course, not course of the clerk. It's been a long day. Okay, in 1932, the Monaco Grand Prix was won by the flying Mantuan, Signor Tazio Nuvolari, in an Alfa Romeo. And what a magical name that is, Alfa Romeo. And their logo, I love that logo, by the way. 2 years later, Alfa would triumph again with a driver who had a very brief racing career, but who Enzo Ferrari would describe as one of the three greats who drove for him, apart from Tazio and Gilles, and this guy's name was Guy Moll. He was from Algeria, but his Pepito was French. Guy Moll was killed in a race at Pescara. Now we look at some F1 races in the Principality. The first race in 1950 was round two that year, and it saw the first F1 success for Juan Manuel Fangio in an Alfa Romeo. No F1 races in the Principality from 51 to 54. Your homeboy Maurice Trintignant won the 1955 race in a Ferrari. He only won two F1 races in his career, both at Monaco. His second win came in 1958 in a Cooper Climax. The 1955 race is also remembered for Alberto Ascari going in the harbor, and I'm sure you've seen pictures of that. Jack Brabham would score his first F1 victory in 1959, also in a Cooper, in a beautiful green color Cooper. The 1961 race is generally regarded as one of the best wins in F1, as Stirling Moss in his Lotus held off a strong Ferrari challenge to win 2 years on the trot. From 1963 to 1966, the race was won by BRM, British Racing Machines, driven by Graham Hill the first 3 years, and in 1966 by Jackie Stewart. In 1970, Jack Brabham had the race all won, but on the last corner of the last lap, he made a mistake, and Jochen Rindt slipped by to take a very unexpected victory, and Jack Brabham, many, many years later, was asked about this mistake, and his response was, "I'm entitled to one mistake in my racing career." In 1981, Gilles Villeneuve won for Ferrari, and the following year, Riccardo Patrese won in a Brabham when one race leader after another dropped on the last lap. Pironi ran out of petrol, Prost had issues, and even Derek Daly, he could have won the race on the last lap. He took the lead, and then I think he had some gearbox issues. In 1984, Prost, your homeboy and the professor, was declared the winner after the race was stopped due to heavy rain. Race is remembered for this controversial decision by Jackie Aix, who was the, you know, clerk of the course, and also for the performance put in by a young rookie driver who should have won the race in his yellow helmet. It did not happen in 1984, but did happen six times in the years to come. And come this Sunday, one man will try again to equal the Monaco record of six wins. And since F1 Weekly Familia members and employees are smart and somewhat knowledgeable, I don't think I need to mention the names here. And that was a goodie bag of moments from Monaco.
Angola, Angola, ik posa, a minhos catamata, o meu corpo a manhã caminho. Es convivência, desnhos vivência, paciência não consequência.
Angola is the home of our next guest, Luis Sa Silva, a young man now racing in F3 Euro Series. My thanks to him for his time and cooperation in doing this interview, and also many thanks to his manager, Nuno de Souza, for his help, and Nuno is from Portugal. Please enjoy the conversation with Luis Sa Silva, and thank you for listening.
Well, first of all, thank you for your time.
It's my pleasure. Nice to meet you.
Okay, the first question I have for you, you are from Angola. Looks like you discovered motorsports in Thailand. Now you're living in Portugal. So give us a little bit background of how you got interested in motorsports, please.
It's like this, like you said, I'm from Angola. Everything started because of my father. He used to race touring cars when he was young. So in Angola, already when I was young, I already used to watch motorsports there. It was not big events like here in Europe or in US, but they already have, and they still have a few races that are going on. And I start to get some interest in it. And also I have my uncle that used to live in Macau, and he also used to race in touring cars. So I got really interested in all the motorsports, and then I told them that I also wanted to join the family tradition. Then that's how I really started to get going into the racing.
How popular is motorsports in Angola these days? You mentioned there is some racing there, and I remember even in the 70s there were races in Angola and Mozambique. How popular is motorsports these days?
I mean, in Angola, how can I explain? The people there, they really enjoy a lot motorsport. It's a shame that until now, how can I say, the government, they still don't support so much. But I also understand a bit the government, because they still have another priority concerning to really rebuild and the city, you know, really get everything going on in a straight way and help in other stuff. But the Angolan people, I'm quite sure they love motorsports, because even the small events, the really smallest ones, you can always see a lot of people gathering to just see the small races. Even when there are only like 5 cars on the grid, you see sometimes a lot of people just to watch those 5 cars.
Okay, and how about karting? Do you have karting culture? Do you have karting tracks in Angola?
Sorry, I didn't understand.
Go-karting. Do you have go-kart tracks there?
I mean, no, actually, go-kart tracks we don't have. But normally what they do, they use in the city, you know, they close some roads and they make it like a go-kart track. But they say they are making now really a proper go-kart track. But for now, it's only closing some roads and then they make the race.
Well, yeah, that's a good way to start. Okay, now let's talk about your karting career. When did you first get involved in racing?
Actually, the first thing I really started racing was in quad bikes when I was 11 years old. And I never actually I didn't join any go-kart race. I actually jumped from a quad bike into a Formula Renault in Asia. I only did just, you know, those rental cars, rental go-karts. That's the only go-kart I really have driven when I was young, before driving a Formula Renault, a 2-liter.
Okay, so you jumped into Formula Renault Asia. Where was this? Give us a little background on this, please.
I was around 14 when I first drove the Formula Renault in Asia. And my first race, I was 15. I didn't know how to really shift, you know, because I didn't drive any car. It was only the quad bike that really I had any idea how to shift. So when I started to drive the Renault, I had to do, they did like a special program with me, the team that took care of me. they put me just driving on the straight line, just doing back and forth on the straight line, like to learn how to shift up, shift down, how to brake with the left foot, all these small things.
Now, when you got into this Formula Renault car, did the driving and feeling comfortable came very quickly to you, like it does with some people, or did you spend a lot of time getting up to speed and up to...
Actually, for me, it was really difficult because on the first time I drove the Renault, I had a big accident. Actually, it was like on my fifth lap with the car, it was really cold during that day. It had rained the day before, so the track was quite slippery. And I went out on the fastest corner of the track. I don't know if you heard about the Zhuhai circuit.
Yeah, sure, I have.
Yeah, the last corner. I didn't have any feeling with the car and everything, so I lost control of the car, and I banged into the tire wall. So I got a bit afraid, I got a bit concerned, not just because of that, because also when I got out of the car, when I was going back to the pits on a scooter, I also fell down from the scooter. So it was quite a dramatic day for me. It was really bad, so that day I had to stop the practice, and I only came the day after. So for me, it took quite a while then to get, the feeling, to get back to the rhythm.
I hope you were not hurt in both these incidents.
No. Fortunately, I was okay. Just a small pain in the arm, in the leg, but no big injury. The problem was just the confidence, after five laps, big crash. I got a bit worried, and also when I started testing with the car, I never had any sponsor. My first race was in 2006, and the only date when I managed to get a sponsor besides my dad was only in 2008. So my big issue was mainly the money that my dad was putting into me. So I was always a bit concerned about crashing, going out, because to damage the car, some parts are quite expensive. So I was always afraid that I had to go out, and then my dad had to put more money. So this was what was making me not to really push myself to the limit.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, now in 2008, I'm looking at this website, driverdb.com, which has a lot of information, which is very good. It says you were fourth in the Asian Formula Renault Challenge, three podiums, three fastest laps. First of all, tell us what tracks you race on the. Did you race on the Asian Formula Renault Challenge?
Yeah, the tracks in the Asian Formula Renault Challenge were the Zhuhai circuit. Mainly, it was more in China, so it was Zhuhai, Shanghai, Beijing, and there was also another circuit. Which name was it called? There is a circuit called Shenduk. I think that's the name. It's also in China, and also we had in Malaysia. Those were the main tracks where we used to race. Normally, we used to do like two rounds in Zhuhai, two rounds in Shanghai. And normally, Malaysia was always only one round.
Okay. What were the highlights? What were your great moments from the 2008 season, please?
Actually, I can even say that for me, before 2008, at the end of 2007, was the best highlight for me, because in the end of the 2007, it was my first podium and my first pole position. And it was on the last race in the Shanghai F1 circuit. And it was also when I got my first big sponsor. It was when I had the confirmation that I would have a support for the last race and also for the upcoming season, 2008. And that's when I really was like, my father, my uncle, they all told me that now, Luis, you don't need to worry about crashing. We have money to cover all these things. You have a big sponsor. You don't need to worry. And that really made me feel really relieved, My dad would not have to pay. So I started to push more myself. And I could also ask the team for them to bring, for example, what they did was to bring another engineer for me, one engineer from Europe. And that was the main difference, because I was in a Chinese team in 2007. For Asia, not bad, but there were already other teams there that had people from Europe. Like, there was a team called, if I don't remember, but the team was related to Prema Power Team. Mm-hmm. They had a small relation, so there were already really good drivers there in Asia in 2007. like do you know Felix Rosenquist, the F3 driver from Munich? He was there in this year. Also Pekka Saarinen, okay, he's already a bit old, but he was driving there. Alex Imperatori, Matthias Becha, a lot of really foreign drivers, not just Chinese. It was a really nice event, and in this event I managed to have the pole position, and in the race I finished third, so I was really happy overall. This was a really big moment for me.
Now, what was the big learning point from you when you got an engineer from Europe?
He really teach me a lot of things. You know? I mean, it was, you know, on reading the data, we really improve a lot of things, because the other engineer that technically he was not really an engineer, you know, but I start to learn more about the data reading, and he was really helping me with the, you know, the releasing of the brake, you know, like I really need to give a hard pressure initial, but I always need to have a nice release. But also him, you know, the car was completely different when he was taking care of the car. The problems I used to feel in the car were changed. Everything was really nice. I felt the car was much better, more stable to drive, you know, so that gave me more confidence to push.
Okay. After a season of racing mostly in China, what is your favorite Chinese dish?
My favorite Chinese dish, there is one, it's called, it's a mix of Chinese and Portuguese, it's called minchi. It's from Macau, it's rice with some potato and some pork. There was another one, a Chinese one, actually I don't remember now well the name.
Do they have stuff like Mongolian beef, which is very popular here in California?
Yeah, they also, because I mean, the good thing is in Macau, they have many things, you know. Macau is like a special place in China where you see all types of people, you know, every foreign, all of them, they gather in Macau. So even in restaurants, everything, you have all the types of restaurants in Macau. So it's really nice place.
Have you ever attended the Macau Grand Prix?
Yes, I joined in 2000, I think it was 2009 or 2008. I think it was end of 2008. Not quite sure now. It was in Formula BMW. It was also quite bad for me. It was a bad mistake.
Okay. Because... Okay. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah, it was because it was like this. If I'm not mistaken, it was 2008. And the thing is, I joined a team that was recently new. Really new. I was not expecting to join Macau, but then my sponsor really wanted me to join. I told them I was not really ready, and I was more focused in my championship, and I never drove the BMW. Of course, it's in terms of power, it's less than the Renault, but some other drivers explained me the car is quite different to drive, the style in the corners. But at the end, okay, because of the pressure I had from my sponsor, I decided to do the race. And when I decided, that was like 1 week before the race. So I didn't even test with the BMW. And the team, it was a really new team, because all the other teams were already full. They didn't have any more space for another try. This team, they didn't even knew well the rules. So I had many problems, you know, like, for example, in the first free practice of the BMW, they had a regulation that you could not, for example, go on new tires or even put stuff like new brake pads and stuff like that. But all the other teams were already ready. So, you know, when you put a new set of tires, you do just the outlap, it's already considered a used tire, you know. So many teams did this kind of things, and they already had prepared the car, like open the brake pads and a lot of things in the car too, so they could already have a nice practice. I didn't have this opportunity. I was trying to do other things to the car, and just everything went wrong in that practice. I think it was also on the practice I had a crash in Lisboa. For the qualifier, I was not confident again. I had my issues, you know, I didn't want to crash again. I just wanted to finish the qualify. So I started last in this race. We were, I think, 24 cars. But during the race, I started to get confident, actually. In the second or third lap of the race, I was already from P25 to P14, and I was feeling quite comfortable. But also, I think it was on lap number 5, I had a problem with my steering wheel. We had a problem that the steering actually came off. It broke. Not really broke. And we suspect of being sabotaged because the things to tie the steering into the car got out. So it was really strange. Really, really strange. And I was already feeling the steering a bit loose, but I was thinking that was just a steering that was not well placed. So I was just trying to keep on going. Then after the Mandarin corner, when I was breaking to the Lisboa, I just saw the steering coming into my hands. After when I was making the turn, the steering just came out and I had another, not a big crash because I was already at the end of the braking and the Lisboa turn is not a fast corner. So I just went into the tire wall, but not a big crash. But it was a shame also for me. But, you know, it's small, it was like small mistakes, small things that then by the year we start learning, you know, like we never, for the Macau GP, we should never have done that. Just 1 week before decide to join, we need to prepare ourselves, really be sure we are in the right team if everything is going well. So these are small mistakes. Then for the next year, for sure, I would not do it again.
Okay. Now, in 2009, you moved to Europe. When you moved and raced in Formula Renault in Europe, what was the biggest surprise, shock for you compared to the racing in Asia?
I think the biggest shock for me was the way the drivers are. They are really much more competitive. But also, the other thing I noticed is like in Europe, they are like not afraid to bump into each other, you know? They're really more aggressive. In Asia, the drivers were like more, how should I say?
Careful?
Yeah, more careful, you know? If they see the other one was trying, they knew they didn't have the chance, maybe they would open a bit more the door. And also in Asia, compared to Europe, at least in the Renault, you would not see a team having a racing insurance, you know, for the car. In Europe, everyone had the racing insurance, so I think that's why they were all like, how should I say, in one way, a bit more crazy. You know, they didn't mind to like really close the door or to have a big crash because they have everything covered. I think it was a bit like this. And also in Europe, another thing I noticed that was really different from Asia was the track time you have in Europe. 1 year in Europe is for sure at least 2 years, not to say three in Asia, at least in the Formula Renault, because many drivers in Europe, they used to do like two championships at the same time, like the NAC and the European Renault Championship. So totally, they used to do between 25 to 30 races. In Asia, the maximum you would do was 12 maximum. So it was always much more track time for them in Europe compared to Asia.
Okay, now, very important question. In terms of your own talent, what you think, what you can do in a car, where did you find yourself mentally when you raced in Europe first time? Did you think that, oh, this is very competitive, or did you think, you know, I can run with these guys? Where were you in terms of talent in the first year of racing in Europe?
In the first year, I was a bit like, yes, these guys are really competitive, they are really strong, and for sure, I need a lot more time to get to the same rhythm of them, but the good thing was the team where I was in the beginning for Renault, they are a really good team. I mean, they were supporting me more in practice because during the race I was in a smaller team. I was always private testing with Motopark. And they were always giving me, you know, hopes, you know, always helping me, like pushing for me. So they also helped me a bit. And I noticed that race by race, my lap times during qualify were improving, you know. I just was a bit unlucky during the race because most of the race sometimes I was involved in a crash, but I could notice that I was improving at least in the qualify because each race I was having always a bit better qualified than the race before. So I was starting to become a bit more confident.
Okay. Now, last year I'm looking at this. You had a victory in the Austrian Formula 3 or Formula 3 as they call them.
Yes.
Where was this victory and how did you find the competition in Formula 3 compared to Formula Renault?
I mean, this Formula 3 Austria was, for me, to tell you the truth, this victory didn't mean actually nothing to me. because in 2010, my main thing for me was the German F3. We just decided to do the Austrian F3 more to do some track time and to learn a bit more the other tracks, you know. But it was also, for, in my point of view, another mistake to do this Austrian, because it was a mix of cars, you know. It was, they put the F3 together with Formula Renault, Formula BMW, all the other cars. So it was really bad because it was like we were overtaking really slow cars. They didn't respect the guys that, that were being lapped. So even one race I would win, and the other race I was out because I crashed into a BMW, for example. So it was not really a good thing for me. And for example, I had pole position in the Austrian F3, but I was not pushing myself. I knew that I was quite far from my limits. So for me, it was really not a big thing. I was not really happy, but that's what my, in the beginning, my sponsor and the team wanted me to do. But actually, I was really not happy at all. I would prefer, for example, to finish like in the P12, P15 in the German, you know. But I knew I was giving my best instead of winning in the Austrian F3. Because I knew that in the Austrian F3, I was not pushing for myself. It was really too easy.
Okay, last year, Formula Pilota China, which I believe is the same thing or same car as Formula Abarth, you were second with two victories. Tell us a little bit about this season, please.
This season was quite interesting. You know, I mean, in 2010, I actually only did these two events of the Austrian F3 and three events of the German, and then I was exactly 1 year without even touching a car, not even for testing, because in one of the accidents I have in the German F3, I had an injury in my left hand, and then I ran out of sponsor. So I was exactly 1 year without driving. So in 2011, this opportunity came. My old team from Formula Renault in 2009, called its Asia Racing Team, they told me they were going to join this new championship, the Formula Abarth. That's mainly the Formula Pilota. And they asked me if I didn't want to join them, you know, help the team just to, like, become better. And I said, why not? I mean, I've been 1 year out. I don't really have much money. And in Asia, it's the costs are much less compared to really much less. And I decided to join the team. It was a team I already knew in Renault. We have a good relation. I really like them. They helped me a lot. It was with them where I learned to drive. So I decided to join them. And I mean, for me, the championship, I think it was really good. I mean, of course, I was vice champion. I was fighting a bit for the championship. But the team we were up against, they were really good. It was Jensen Motorsports. They were the winners in Europe. They have a lot of experience compared to us. And, I mean, it was quite difficult to match them. But it went nice. I mean, during the races. Also, we had another team called Near International that was there. Also, another European team. So it was an interesting championship.
Okay. Now, this year you are in Formula 3 Euro Series, very competitive series. First of all, looking at this, says you are with Team Angola Racing Team. I understand your sponsor is the oil company, Sonangol?
Yes.
Okay. Angola Racing Team obviously is a name for a team that was already in existence. Which team is that?
It's Prema Power Team. It's actually, I'm joining Prema. I'm with them. But this is something we decided to do. It's like a small idea project from us to help also put the name of Angola in the racing, you know, so for people to know more about Angola, you know. So that's why we decided to make, like, a new other team, but actually it's Prema, but it's called Angola Racing Team.
Yeah, no, Prema is a very successful Italian team. I'm very familiar with them. And you will have a Mercedes engine.
Yes.
Okay. This is a very tough series. I'm glad you are here. What are your realistic expectations from this season?
I mean, for sure, I'm really happy for one thing. I'm in a really good team, so I know that I can count with the full support from them to really give me a good car. I mean, compared to the drivers now, all of them, I know they have a lot of experienced drivers, and even in this year, I mean, I only still didn't have only have 2 days testing with the new car compared to most of them that already done more than 2 days, because for me the cars, you know, it's a new F3, and for some driver it took more time to receive the cars. But to tell you the truth, I feel quite confident myself. I think with this team I will be able to have some good results. You know, I know in the first race will take a while, but for sure in the mid-season I'm hoping to be already at the top six, top eight, you know, to really be there fighting, not just in the race, but in the qualify, to already start to be in the front. But I know it will be really difficult, really tough, but for sure I believe in the team. I also believe in myself. I think if you have a really good team and if you really push yourself, I mean, everything is possible, you know. I know it's a really tough championship, but it's the other thing. I mean, the team where I am, they have really good drivers, like Danny Giuncadella, Michael Lewis, a lot of really good drivers, and I think I can learn a lot from them, you know. I think when you have a really good teammate, you can always learn a lot from him and help improve yourself.
In the 2 days of testing you have done, are you feeling comfortable with the new car?
Yeah, the car is nice. Is compared to the old version that I also didn't drive so much, actually, it's not so different. For sure, the steering is, I don't know if it's because of the tires also, because now we are going to use Hankook instead of Kumu. The steering is more stiff, you know? So we really need to, not just in the car, but outside, we really need to get prepared really well physically. So this is will be a nice car to drive, difficult for sure, really demanding. But I actually felt quite comfortable. The 2 days of testing went quite okay, quite good, positive.
Your racing efforts, are you getting good media coverage in Angola?
Still a bit difficult, you know, but we are trying to work on that for this year. We are trying, but I think actually for the year it is, will be a bit better, because I think in Angola they actually will be able to catch the NTV channel from Germany. Normally the NTV is a channel that they show live the race. So we are really looking to see if we can have that channel in Angola. We are talking to see if we can get that channel to help that coverage become much better, so that people can really watch my race live.
Okay. And who is guiding and managing your career right now?
The person who's taking care of my career is the same one who's taking care of Danny Giuncadella's career. I think you heard him. His name is Nuno Sousa Pinto. The name of his company is Winway.
Good. Now, we do our program from California. Have you looked at American racing before you decided to go F3 Euro Series?
I already saw a bit, because actually there is another driver that's half Angolan. He was doing Formula Indy Lights in America, and I think now he's doing some NASCAR, not the main one, some category, but... And I've been watching, and also I had one. There is a new driver from Israel. I don't know if you heard him, Alan Day.
Yeah, I know him.
He's also doing Indy Lights, and it was with him who I was fighting in 2009 for the championship in the Renault. And also in 2010, we were not teammates, but we were in the same championship. We were in the German F3 also. So I was also thinking in the beginning to go actually to the Formula Indy Lights. But I was thinking more of the Indy Lights in case I could not find a big sponsor, because I think still nowadays in Europe it's where you can really learn the best, you know, to really become better, to really show more yourself. It's still in Europe.
And your goal, I'm sure, is Formula Uno?
Yeah, my goal is to get to F1. I'm trying to do that. I know it's difficult, but who knows? And sometimes we see other drivers. It depends not just on the driver. It also depends on the country. A lot of things are involved to get in F1. But also my other main thing is really to become a well-known driver in Europe, you know? Not just any kind of driver. Even if I don't reach F1, just to be known as a really good driver, you know, someone well known with good, how should I say, with good aspect, you know.
Now, when you were growing up, did you have any racing heroes?
Yeah, actually, when I was growing up, my favorite. I mean, I always have a thing for Finn drivers. I always like Mika Häkkinen. I really like Kimi Räikkönen. I'm really happy to see him coming back in F1. But the one I really always enjoyed, at least when I was young, was Mika Häkkinen. I know I heard a bit from Ayrton Senna, but I was too young to really to know how he was. You know, I saw some races now, but when he used to race, I was too young, and so I cannot say so much like some other people talk about Ayrton Senna. But from Mika Häkkinen, I already knew a bit more about. I already used to pay a bit more attention to racing. So, yeah, for me, he's my idol.
Well, you're in Portugal. Senna's first victory came in heavy rain in Portugal in 1985. If you ever get a chance to catch that on YouTube or a DVD, I would highly recommend.
Yeah, I even watched, there was a movie, a commentary from Ayrton Senna. I saw that. I was really liked that movie. I was really impressed with the things he did. I know he's a really, really good driver. I have a big respect for him, you know. I really like him, but it's like I told you, when I don't want to be that person that just says, I like Ayrton Senna, he's my idol, because I think for us sometimes to have an idol, it needs to be someone who we are watching when we already have an idea. Of course, the ones that we didn't watch can still become, but for me it's more like this. But I have a big respect for Ayrton Senna, for sure.
Great. Now, tell us a little bit about Luis Silva, the person, not the race car driver. What kind of music you like? What sports do you enjoy watching apart from motorsports? And, you know,
I'm actually a lot into house music. I really love house music. I'm a big fan. I also like the music from my country. They call it, I don't know if you heard this name, Kuduro or Kizomba. That's the name of the music in Angola. But I think it's maybe because I'm living here in Europe or in Asia, I'm more into house music. In terms of other sports, besides motorsports, I like to watch a lot football and also tennis.
What's your favorite team, Benfica?
And no, actually, I'm from Sporting Lisbon.
Okay, good, good. How are they doing these days?
Actually, not so good. At least not in the Champions League, the other one, the Liga Europa, they're doing quite nice. They're in the semifinals. I'm hoping they can win because here in Portugal, they're not doing so well.
And who is your favorite footballer?
My favorite footballer, he doesn't play anymore now. I mean, he still plays, but not in a big team. He was from Brazil. He's from Brazil. He's called Roberto Carlos. He was a defender, but I really love him because he was a small guy, but really quick with a really strong kick.
Cool, cool. Okay, now, when is your first race, Luis?
When?
When is your first race and where?
My first race will be next weekend in Hockenheim.
Oh,
will
wow.
The beginning of the season. I'm really hoping for that because actually, like I told you, Hockenheim is also a track I really like, enjoy. So I'm hoping if it doesn't rain, of course, because I'm not so used to the rain and I didn't have the opportunity to test the new F3 in the rain. So if it's a really nice weekend without rain, I'm hoping already to have a decent result for me, a decent start.
Great. I have been to Hockenheim a few times and I have watched DTM and a F3 race there. I wish you all the best. And, you know, hopefully you will have a win soon and then we will chat again.
Yeah, okay. I'm thank you and I'm really happy to meet you and to have the privilege to have this this interview with you.
Oh, thank you so much and all the best.
All the best and we keep in touch.
Absolutely.
Lewis, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And Nasser, thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. Let's just wrap it up. We want to thank and mention our Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus sites. Just do a search for F1 Weekly, and you know what to do next. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, just email me at info@f1weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. Good night.
Bye-bye.